This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
All right, we're going to get started. I don't know how many of you heard me, but it's always a challenge to have a breakout session in the afternoon because it's after lunch. Today it's warm. And it's a little bit dreary, so no sleeping in my classroom. I'll begin with a story. This is a story from Patty Woodlawn, and she has two siblings, Tom and Warren. And she also has some other siblings. She has a little tag-along sister. And their cousin from Boston is going to be visiting them at this moment. So we're going to break into the chapter, and Annabelle is the cousin from Boston. And she's just come down from the stairway. And she's very intrigued with this rustic way of life. Remember, she's from Boston. When they entered the house, Annabelle had just come down, bouncing from the stairs, resolved upon being uncivilized for the day. She wore a beautiful new dress, which was of such a novel style and cut that Mother and Clara could not admire it enough. Up and down, both front and back of the fitted bodice, was a row of tiny black jet buttons. And they sparkled at you when you looked at them. Warren said, "You don't need all those buttons to fasten up your dress, do you?" "Of course not," laughed Annabelle. "They offer decoration. All the girls in Boston are wearing them now, but none of them have as many buttons as I have. I have 18, and that's 6 more than Bessie Beasley and 14 more than Mary Adams." "Oh, you don't say," said Tom, and once again he and Pat exchanged glances. "What shall I have? When shall I have my writing lesson?" asked Annabelle after breakfast. "Right away, if you'd like," Caddy said pleasantly. Clara stayed to help Mother and Minnie, who was playing with Baby Joe, but Hetty came with the others. "Hadn't you better stay with Mother, Hetty?" said Tom in his kindest voice. But no, Hetty wanted to see the writing lesson. Annabelle chattered vivaciously of how much better everything was done in Boston while Tom went into the barn to bring out the horse. "Why, Tom," cried Hetty when he returned, "that's not Betsy, that's Pete." Pete was perfectly gentle in appearance, but he had one trick which had kept the children off his back for several years. "Hetty," said Caddy firmly, "we must have perfect quiet while everyone is learning to ride. If you can't be perfectly quiet, we'll have to send you right back to the house." "I suppose he bucks," said Cousin Annabelle. "All Western horses do, don't they? Shall I be hurt?" "He's pretty gentle," said Tom. "You better get on, and you'll find out." "A fair back and a stride?" quavered Annabelle. "Dear me, how quaint and rustic." Caddy and Tom helped her run. "He hasn't started bucking yet," said Annabelle proudly. "I knew that I should be a good rider." "Just touch him with the switch a little," advised Tom. At the touch of the switch, Pete swung into a gentle canter. But instead of following the road, he made for a particular shed at the back of the barn. It was Pete's one accomplishment. "How do I pull the rein to make him go the other way?" queried Annabelle. But already Pete was gathering momentum, and before they could answer, he had swung in under the low shed, scraped Annabelle neatly off into the dust, and was standing peacefully at rest inside the shed, picking up wisps of hay. Annabelle sat up in a daze. The little straw sun hat which she had insisted on wearing was over one ear, and she looked rather comical indeed. "I don't understand what happened," she said politely. I thought that I was going along so well in Boston. I'm sure the horses never behave like that. Would you like to try another horse? Said Tom. Oh, no, said Annabel hastily. Not today, at least. Couldn't we go and sort the sheep now, perhaps? Do you think we could, Tom? Asked Patty doubtfully. Well, yes, I believe we could, said Tom kindly. Here, let me help you get up, Cousin Annabel. I'll get the salt, shouted Warren, racing into the barn. Patty looked on in silence, her eyes round with surprise. Annabel rose a bit stiffly, brushed off the back of her beautiful dress. She's not a crybaby at any rate, thought Patty to herself. Maybe it's kind of mean to play another trick on her. But Warren had already returned with the salt, and he and Tom, with Annabel between them, were setting out for the woodland pasture where Father kept the sheep. Patty hastened to catch up with them, and Hetty, still wondering, tagged along behind. Will they eat out of my hand if I hold it out for them? Asked Annabel, taking the chunk of salt from Warren. Sure, said Tom. They're always crazy about salt. But you mustn't hold it, said Hetty, coming up panting. You must lay it down where the sheep can get it. Now, Hetty, said Patty, what did I tell you about keeping perfectly quiet? You do just as you like, Annabel, said Tom kindly. Well, of course, said Annabel. I should prefer to hold it and let the cunning little lambs eat it right out of my hands. All right, said Tom. You go alone then, and we'll stay outside the fence here where we can watch you. It's so nice of you to let me do it, said Cousin Annabel. How do you call them? Tom uttered a low, persuasive call, the call to salt. He uttered it two or three times, and sheep began calming from all parts of the woods into the open pasture. Annabel stood there expectantly, holding out the salt, a bright smile on her face. We don't have sheep in Boston, she said. But almost immediately the smile began to fade. The sheep were crowding all around her, so close she could hardly move. They were treading on her toes and climbing on each other's backs to get near her. Frightened, she held up the salt out of their reach, and then she began to try to climb up. Then they began to try to climb up her as if she had been a ladder. There was a perfect pandemonium of bleating and baying, and above this noise rose Annabel's despairing shriek. Drop the salt and run, called Tom, himself a little frightened at the success of his joke. But running was not an easy matter with 30 or 40 sheep around her, all still believing she held the salt. At last, poor Annabel succeeded in breaking away, and they helped her over the fence. But when she was safe on the other side, everybody stopped and looked at her in amazement. The 8 and 80 sparkling jet buttons had disappeared from her frock. The sheep.
Oh, my buttons, cried Annabel. They were 8 and 80 of them, 6 more than Bessie Beasley had. And where is my sun hat?
Across the fence in the milling crowd of sheep, the wicked woodlands beheld with glee Annabel's beautiful sun hat rakishly dangling from the left horn of an old fat ram.
So what makes us smile about that story? You're going to have this little booklet to put your notes into. It is something that I use with my students a lot. I make little booklets and we write notes into them, or we just have a lesson with a booklet. And it's just a fun way to do something differently other than having a workbook. So I have a few questions here as we get started. And in your booklet, write down these answers. How important is the subject of reading to me on a scale of 1 to 10, you as a teacher? 10 being high, it's very important, 1 being low. So, 5, 7,
6. As you think about teaching reading, where would that come on your list? Second question. What is something you remember about reading class when you were a student in school? Like maybe it was something about the storybooks you used, or a reading lesson, or how the teacher taught reading. I'll give you a moment there. And finally, what is something you remember about reading class? We'll skip the turn and tell for right now. I'm taking this workshop because why are you taking it? What do you want to learn? Okay, just to get started here, take the three things here that we put down on our page and turn and tell the person beside you some of the answers that you wrote down about these questions I have listed. Maybe there have to, some of you might have to go three. I'm not sure if it comes out in your place here. So when I say freeze to my classroom, they have to stop whatever they're doing, hold the position for a few seconds, and then when I kind of relax, they relax too. So it's like you stop mid-sentence, you stop mid-stride, whatever you're doing, and for some reason, fifth and sixth graders always find really unique positions when I say freeze, and I'm not sure how they got there, but anyway, they are in that position. I'm curious, how many of you will be going into the classroom for the first time this year? I'm just wanting to get a general idea of who I'm talking to. Okay, good. How many have taught 3 years or less? Okay, good. I hope your questions will be answered. If they aren't at the end, I'm willing to give you some more answers. I will not be able to cover everything. A subject like this could go for 5 days and probably still not be done. But I do want to give you a foundation to think about why we teach reading. And certainly it is to make skilled readers. And we want you to think a little bit about the goals you should consider. So I'm going to take some passages from Scripture. We'll go through the next two slides quite rapidly. You might not be able to keep up, but you might want to jot down a word or two from each of the bullets that I'm going to share with you. So to make skilled readers, we want to prepare a people to that can read fluently. Nehemiah 8 says, they read in the book and the law of God distinctly. Fluency is being distinct and being able to read at a rate that people can understand and get the sense from what they're reading. We prepare a people who can comprehend what they read. Sometimes you're going to have students that can read but cannot comprehend. Nehemiah 8:8 says, so they read in the book and gave the sense so that people could understand. And we prepare a people who can explain what they read. Now, if they can explain what they read, they have comprehended, and they're owning the information. Nehemiah 8:8 says, so they read in the book and caused them to understand the meaning. So we're preparing a people that will become skilled readers, but we also want to prepare a people that can be effective leaders. I always cringe when I hear a leader say, I don't really care to read books. And I think, you're a leader, you need to. People who read are people who lead. God gave directives for leaders to read the word. In Deuteronomy 17, we have 18 through 20,
He shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God. That was a directive that God gave to the kings of Israel. They had to be a reader. They had to keep a law beside them and read in it daily. How much more for you as teachers? You will be so busy. Those of you that haven't taught yet, you will be so busy this fall. You don't know what's going to be up or down. Mostly down for a few days. Take time, 5 minutes in the morning. Just take time to reflect. Read a proverb, read a song. If that's all you can do in this season, but do that much. It is important, it's crucial that you are a reader of the Word. God's leaders were called to meditate in His Word. In Joshua 1:8, God called Joshua and He said, I want you to meditate in God's Word day and night. God's leaders were expected to share the word. Deuteronomy 31:11, thou shalt read this law before all Israel in their meaning. Again, I want to emphasize that people who read are people who can lead. All right, we're going to transition here. So that's kind of the foundation. That's where we're coming from. There are two main words in reading that you always want to remember: fluency and comprehension. Fluency and comprehension are very vital to reading well and comprehending well, of course. So we're going to hopefully address some of those. So I'm going to give you an overview. You don't necessarily have to write this down, but I'm going to give you an overview of what we're going to cover here in the next 45 minutes. There are three words that you want to remember as you do or prepare for a reading class. Now, I just gave you two, but it had to do with the actual reading. But as you think about preparing a lesson, you want to think about three components. And some of you are going to be so lucky because you're going to have a curriculum that has a teacher manual, and every lesson is laid out. You'll have the objective. You'll have an introduction. They'll tell you how to read the passage, and then they'll have some questions at the end. If you have a curriculum like that and you're a first-year teacher, follow it. Don't deviate. Second year, you can do what you want. But it really is structured to help a beginning teacher, and it's going to be to your benefit. The other thing I want to quickly insert, because I'm not sure where else I'll put it, please read your story before you have the reading class. Even if you only have time to skim it, do that much. If you don't have time to read it, some of you are going to be teaching 4 or 5 classes or grades, and it's going to be very difficult. But as much as you can, get into that reader and make sure you know what the lesson is about. Some of you are going into a classroom and you have a reading book. Now, there are two words that you'll come across in your teaching experience. You have what we call trade books, and we have what we call basal readers. And your basal reader are the readers where you have the short stories and the vocabulary is directed and created for a specific grade. So you won't have surprise vocabulary. When you use a book like this, a book on the market, it's a trade book. And sometimes some schools use novels like this, and you're going to have to make your own lessons. So I don't know who I'm talking to, but I think what I'm going to say today is going to apply no matter what you have in your experience here. So pre-reading is the first word that you want to remember. That's student preparation. In pre-reading, you have vocabulary. You're going to introduce vocabulary, and you're going to introduce story. If there's any place where teachers skip out on, it's this one. But I promise you, if you don't skip out on this, this will actually build their comprehension. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. Don't skip out on the pre-reading experience. Then you have the reading experience. And you have oral reading methods, and we'll talk a little bit about grading oral reading. And then we have the post-reading experience, and we have comprehension and some questions I want to address as well. So what we do before the reading, before we read the story, reading the story, and then finally what we do after reading the story. Okay, so pre-reading. we want to look at some vocabulary experiences. The first one I named as Roundup Road. I made some of these with some alliterations so that you can remember them a bit better. It's simply a list of words that you might have from your reading lesson. Nowadays, we have computers. It doesn't take very long to write up the list of vocabulary words. And on the back side, I also put my definitions so I know what they are. And I have them say the, moving here. We recite the words and the definition. So I have them say, as we recite them, I have them say the words twice, because you always will have a lagging student. So we'll practice this a little bit. Excuse me. I'm going to read the word and the definition. After you, let me back up. I'm going to say the word. You say the word twice. I'll read the definition. I'll just show you how I might go through a chart like this. It's very rote. It's nothing scintillating or exciting. It's just something we do to help them familiarize themselves with the words that will be in the story. So, vivaciously, you say it twice.
Vivaciously, vivaciously.
Okay. And if you're a fifth and sixth grade teacher, at that speed, it's going to be a little bit slow. So you'll want them to speed up. It'll also build your classroom culture. You'll want them to say, vivaciously, vivaciously. Try it again.
Vivaciously, vivaciously.
Got it. Let's do another two. One leg on each side.
Astride.
One leg on each side. Quaint.
Quaint.
Old-fashioned or unfamiliar. Now, if you're a third-grade teacher, you might have to slow it down. But you're going to find that you always have that lagger. That's why you say the words twice. It also just implements that word a little bit better. Some of the students will know all the words, but when you get them to actually give the definition to the word, they struggle with it. So they do need that practice. Sometimes I have them on a flashcard as well. So this is a science flashcard thing. So I would do something like this. Astronomy. And then the study of matter and energy and the structure of the universe. The benefit of having flashcards is that you can actually play games with it then. And you play a relay game. You give the definition. They have to give the word after they have it all memorized. Now, again, I wouldn't do that for reading for 5 and 6, but maybe 3rd and 4th, because they need more practice with the vocabulary than what 5 and 6 would need. 5 and 6, it's very fine to just do something like this, or an overhead will work fine as well. The other thing they love to do is to act out words. So I have asked two people to act out a word. They know what the word is, but you don't. You're going to look at the list and see if you can figure out what they're acting out. Thank you. Class, what did he act out? What did we practice?
Vivaciously,
everybody.
Vivaciously.
Let's see if we can figure out what word she's acting out. A little high there.
Yay!
What is the word?
Astride.
Very good. That also implements the word in their mind. Not all words can be acted out, but it's amazing sometimes if I go around a word like this, it's amazing what they'll think of. And, of course, they have to know the definition, and students will figure out eventually what they're trying to act out. Any questions about rounding up here? I'm sorry, I'm a little bit slow with my... There we go. Word acting. Actively engage the body. Even 5th and 6th graders, sometimes they're very much grown-ups, and the next time they can act like 3rd and 4th graders, and it's just okay, because it's just you and them that is in the classroom. Kinky kinesthetics. Children need to move. Don't let them sit too long. Here's one. Doodling and drawing. Just draw pictures of vocabulary draw a picture with a short definition. This works for spelling class too as well. It's very effective because they're thinking about the word as they're drawing. However, it is time consuming. So I would suggest that it would be words that are really difficult for them to remember. And choose out of your list maybe three or four things. A quick way to do that is to simply take a piece of paper, have them fold it in half, and make a little booklet like this. And you have four words right away. This is a fun little way to hand in or to work in a little booklet and give them 5 or 10 minutes to work on it. Now, again, if you have three or four grades, you won't have time for this, but you'll do the kinds of things that you have time for. Another one is soaking up synonyms, expanding the concept. Sometimes it's helpful to just focus on one word, especially if it's going to be a word that will be the theme of your story. So let's think about the word laugh, and what are other kinds of sounds we make that kind of fall in the idea of laughter? So think a little bit. Think of a word that might go in with that. All right, turn and tell. What are words you're thinking about? How many had snicker? Chortle. Cackle. What are some others you thought of? Giggle? Yes. Okay. And so you ask students to also contribute as well. Now, that's vocabulary. I usually start the reading class with vocabulary. Get that out of the way. Think of it as a 2-3 minute, at the very most 3 minutes, even 1 or 2 minutes with vocabulary. If you're upper grade, the upper elementary, that will be sufficient. Third or fourth grade, you might have to spend just a little bit more time with vocabulary to make sure that they're all pronouncing the words. The next thing is thinking about the story and transitioning into the story. And this is the part where we often kind of break down. But if you can help them start thinking about the story, prepare their minds, and give them hooks to understand the theme and the concept of the story, you're going to help them comprehend the story a little bit better. So let me give you some examples here. Hooks, another way of thinking about it would be the hook before the story. And it's simply to kind of entice the students into the reading lesson without saying, okay, it's time for reading lesson. Open your books to page 27. If it's the middle of the year, they're going to start learning. So you have to be a little bit more creative and kind of entice them into the reading by saying, hey, I want to show you a title here today. And you might write it on the board, you might show it on the book. And you're going to be looking at seeking clues to the story and making predictions. So let's look at the title here, Sounder. Twyla, what word do you see in the word sounder? Sound, yes. What do you think this story might be about? Looking at the title here, Sounder, and maybe you see the picture. So what might it be about? How many have read the book? We need to read this book. Timothy, what do you think the story might be about?
A boy and his dog.
Why would he be called Sounder? What kind of dog do you have at home? And the stories start abounding, and then you'll have to say, I'd love to hear more of your stories, but we're going to have to hold off here because we need to get on with reading. And like, but you know, you have them hooked when you start talking about titles. Another thing you can do, which is what I just now did, looking at picture prompts, and you invite response to observations, personal connections. So I might do something like this. What does this remind you of? And a student will say, I have a dog too. And we talk about their dogs a little bit.
Once they start sharing their stories, you're going to have to cut it down. And the way you do that is you say, okay, we have all these stories. I'm going to take two more people, and it's going to be, and then they know, okay? And then the rest of them, if they look dreadfully, dreadfully disappointed, you say, oh, I just see that. Twyla is so disappointed. Twyla, you tell me the story at recess time, okay? So, and then that kind of makes it okay. But you have to watch your time, or they're going to steal your reading time. They want to tell stories. Another thing to think about is to use objects. Keep it simple. Just look around your room and see what you can pick up as an object. Now, I also have, over the years, I collected a number of objects that I put into a box, and I just keep it in my classroom so I can quickly pull something else, like a scarf or shoes or a belt, glasses, hats, that kind of thing. But keep it simple, so I might show something like this. Today in our story, we're going to have something about plants. And have you thought about the fact that a plant could hurt you? How could a plant hurt you? Turn and tell. Go ahead and do it. And then whenever I do a turn and tell, I do a quick... ask a few people again how a plant might hurt you using objects, but keep it simple. Then we also have busy brainstorms, and that's a rapid succession of ideas or lists. You ask the question that has multiple possibilities. Students can respond individually, or you can do small groups or large groups. Sometimes a timed list works really well. You can also have it written or oral. Have them write it down. To save time, I often do it orally because it's a lot faster than if I'm writing it on the chalkboard and they're getting answers. Whenever we do brainstorms, I don't have them raise their hands. But they have to be respectful of each other. And, of course, you have to know your classroom. But it takes time if you're always calling on people. And I'll have my back kind of turned this way. By the way, you need teachers. Never do this when you're writing. Know why? Somebody who has taught a year or two, tell me, why don't you turn your back like this while you're teaching? Okay, this is really important. It's all about classroom management. You do it like this. And try to always stay kind of so that you can scan the classroom. And just keep moving along. But there's this sense that you're half turned. And they know that you're kind of watching them. When you're doing this, you don't know what a sixth and fifth grade boy will do. So you need that. That's how you have eyes in the back of your head, okay? I'm going to tell you this, too. When you're working with a student, make sure you're always standing in a way that you can see the whole classroom. Because things happen when you have your back turned. You want to trust those little angels, but they're just not always angels. Let's see here. I think we better keep going. I was going to practice that just a little bit. And then we can also have quality questions. Ask a thinking question. And when you ask the question, then you pause just a little bit to give them time to think. So, why were you smiling? I mean this for you to do, okay? So, why were you smiling and kind of chuckling about Annabelle's eight and 80 buttons that disappear? Turn and talk. When you ask a quality question, you do a why or how. That makes them speak a little bit more than when you ask the very simple questions of who, what, where, when. Ask that how and why questions. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. And then finally, the other way you can introduce a story is share a personal story.
related to the theme of the story. So, you know what? When I say one day Miss Yoder was very disobedient, oh my, the ears really perk up because they can't imagine Miss Yoder being disobedient and getting a spanking from her father at 12 years of age. And then, of course, you transition into the current story. Avoid the tendency for that to become the story of the day. But it will trigger other stories in the students' minds as well. So that's the pre-reading. Say pre-reading.
Pre-reading.
Okay, what are the two things you do in pre-reading? First, you have the vocabulary. You're great students. And the second thing is preparing for the
story.
Right. Now we come to the third thing, the reading experience. And I want to think about methods for oral reading. One of the methods is round robin. The student reads the assigned portion, and then you announce the set reading pattern, like how many paragraphs they'll read or how many lines that they're going to read or what part of the pages they will read or half a page or whatever. It is a very efficient way to read because you just go around the room and the next person in line knows to read next when that person is done. Efficient, but very predictable. You can do this for a while, but you're going to lose interest, and the fast reader will always go ahead and keep reading because they can count up the paragraphs and know when it's their turn to read and be ready to read. It works occasionally. It really does. It's okay to use it now and then. I have found that there are other ways. I like to keep a lot of variety going here. The other thing you have to think about, I keep my students at their desks, and sometimes because we have chairs, we'll sit in a circle. Actually, sitting in a circle is a very, very good way to read, especially if you're reading round robin. Round robin just simply means you go person after person after person. The teacher doesn't call on any student. And so if you're sitting in a circle, that works well. And it also really makes the teacher respond, the teacher sitting in that circle, and it just makes the students more responsible. For reading class, don't have the students sit on the floor. When you're reading in a really formal way, because students cannot keep their bodies to themselves. Now, I do make an exception when we pair or we do small group, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But when you're having class, sometimes, you know, teachers like this cozy feeling of having the students all around them. It's fine to sit in chairs, but don't have them sit on the floor. They just have a hard time with boundaries. Pulling sticks. So I have, and because I didn't have time, I put names on craft sticks, and like the popsicle sticks, that's what I'm talking about, and I put them in a mug. And then the name is pulled out, and that signals the next reader. And then students read the assigned portion. So, for example, I'll pull this out. So they never know. You can stay seated wherever you are. I'll pull out the name Joe. Read two paragraphs. And I might keep it out. I might put it back in. I'll pull another one, Dick. So if you keep it out, they know kind of when their turn is coming at some point, but it still keeps them a little bit more on the edge because if it's a fast reader that read first, then he can kind of read ahead. So it's a challenge to keep them all together and to stay focused. What I have done is I've also graded them. I tell them I'm going to grade you for attentiveness and watch, seeing whether you're staying with the class or not. And I give maybe 5 points to them if they stay with me for the day. It's just a matter of writing that in my grade book. You got 5 points because you stayed with me during reading class. I don't do it every day, but it's one way to work at it. Another thing we do is chain reading. And I set the timer for 45 seconds to a minute, and the student reads until the timer beeps, and then the next student begins reading. Now, I'm going to do a little bit differently. We're just going to start here with the second row. What is your name? Julia? Okay, Julian. I'd like for you to start. Get the one on Searchlight. Stone Fox. Start there. And I'm going to set it for 10 seconds. one thing I do is when I have my students, when we read in the classroom and we stay at our desk, I have them stand to read, to project their voice. And it also just makes them a little bit more sit up. It makes them sit up and do a better job than when they just slouch at their desk. So at reading class, they stand for me. So I'd like for you to stand as well. 10 seconds. When you hear the beep going off, just stop mid-sentence, and the next person will pick it up. Okay? So you won't have much time to read, but it'll give us an idea. We'll do a couple people. We'll stop at some point here. Let me get my timer going here. Yes, start at, he looked up. Let's start there, okay? Oh. Hang on. I didn't give a good signal there. Okay, I'll say words. I'll say start. Start.
He looked up and down, listening to the street. He was grinning from ear to ear. Such like walked over and stood in front of the sled, waiting to be hitched up. But little Willie wasn't ready to go yet.
And let the sun warm his face. He felt great. In his pocket was the map Mayor Smiley had given him, showing the 10 miles the race covered. Down Main Street, right on North Road, little Willie could hardly hold back his excitement.
5 miles of the race, he traveled every day and knew with his eyes closed. The last 5 miles were back into town along the South Road, which was mostly straight and flat. With speed, that would count here, and with the lead he knew he could get in the first 5 miles, little Willie was sure he could win.
We're back to start here, so a little bit too late here. Okay, we'll stop with that. Get the idea how you do this chain reading? And it's very efficient because you keep going around the room. You know, you don't really know how soon it'll come up to you because some students read faster and others read slower. That's chain reading. Reader's theater is something they love to do. You assign dialogue parts to the students. I also assign narrators for a page. And then the narrator, I have the narrators come to the front, and they read the narration part. And the people who are the characters in the story stay at either sit in groups or stay at their desks. So sometimes I have people in groups, like so maybe 4 or 5 students might be the mom in the story, or 4 or 5 boys will be the son in the story. And so I don't just have solo voices, but sometimes I do. More often I don't, because I want everyone involved. Let's turn over to the next, on the next page of, I don't think I have my sheet here. Okay, thank you. We'll have this side. I want this side to be Jeffrey. So whenever Jeffrey speaks, you're going to read as a class. You're going to be Jeffrey. And those of you over here will be the friar. And I will, and so whatever words he speaks, you'll read together. And then I'll just narrate the rest of it. We will start down here about the middle of the story where it says, Jeffrey saw Robin at the same moment. Everybody with me? All right, let's try that. Jeffrey saw Robin at the same moment.
Hi, Birdchance,
he called.
Art finding fish for thy fasting?
Off came the last ragged garment, down with the crutches, and with a whoosh, he was into the water with the others and away with the current. Thrashing arms and legs beat the water into foam and spoiled the fishing. Robin wished with all his heart that he could go into the water. I'm going to jump down to the friar saw. The friar saw Robin's hungry look.
Off with thy jerkin,
he said, at the same time rising and taking off his own habit.
We'll give thee a good bath and cleanse thy humor. Who knows? Mayhap we can teach thee to swim.
He pulled off Robin's hosen and carried him into the water, holding and dipping him where the current ran deep. And we'll stop there. That's how you do a reader's theater. You can also bring them up, and if you have a large class, do one group one day and one group the next day. Have them come up in the front, sit on rows of chairs, and when it's their turn to speak, they can do that thing. You will have some good readers, especially in upper elementary, that can actually narrate like I did.
And you will have third and fourth graders at times that can do that as well on their level. Any questions about this activity? Another one I do is fill in the word, and I use this for lengthy passages and when I'm really pressed for time that day. I will just read the story because I can read it faster as a general rule than what they can, because I don't have to include all the lagging readers. So I give them a predetermined word ahead of time, or words, and it also really keeps the students engaged. The advantage is also, another advantage is that you as a teacher can model good reading. So let's go back to Stone Fox. We'll practice this a little bit. And every time you see the word, let's have the word dog or sled. Let's have the word dog, sled. And in all right. We're going to start in the second column. And we'll start where it says the dogs. So you will use those words whenever they come to our in these two paragraphs, whenever they come up in the paragraph. The
dogs
held their heads up proudly and strutted in unison. They pulled a large but lightly constructed
sled.
They also pulled a large but by no means lightly constructed man. Way down at the end of the street, the man looked normal. But as the
sled
got closer, the man got bigger and bigger. The man was an
Indian,
dressed in furs, and that's where we'll stop. Okay, get the idea? Fill in the word. Popcorn reading. You read sentences in round robin style, and they pop out the reading as one person. So, or pop out that sentence as one person. You here I don't have them scan, because by the time they stand and sit down and the next person stands and sits down, then we lose the fluency of the story. So I like to sit in a circle or just stay in their seats and figure out a way to keep going around the room. So let's try that with Stone Fox again, and let's start with 5 miles of the race. And we'll have the third row over here. Let's start with you. One sentence, the next person does the next, will go across, and I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 of you will read a sentence. So go ahead. 5 miles of the race. Start.
5 miles of the race to town every day, and we were with lots of things. The last 5 miles were back into town along South Road, which was mostly straight and flat. It's speed that we can't hear, and we can't hear it. The first 5 miles, I don't really sure. As little Lily switched searchlight to the sled, something down the middle of the street, some moving objects, caught his eye. They were difficult to see because they were all white. There were 5 of them, and they were beautiful.
And we'll stop there. Thank you. So that is reading, doing popcorn reading. They will find that a little bit challenging, because to read as one person would read it, it's very easy to lose their place, and it really comes around very fast. You get around the room quite rapidly in that way. And finally, we have 2 other methods I'd like to talk about, and these vary a little bit as well. Reading in groups is a very good thing because, or reading in pairs, it provides them a lot of opportunity to do lots of oral reading, and not just one person and all the classes listening to that one person. So I like to have 3 or 4 small groups going at a time, about 3 or 4 in a group. And we huddle around the room, and everybody has their book. And again, I tend to have them on chairs because it just works better. And that is usually the day where I grade their participation, because I can't be with every group. Now, this is not the time where I should be going back to my desk and doing some quick checking. You are around, circling around and listening to different people read. But you go from group to group, and I give them, I'll say, you get 10 points for this reading class, if you pay attention, you get to keep the 10 points. First point off, if you're goofing off or you're not paying attention, that's a 90% already. Second point off is an 80%. You're down to a C. And 3 points off is a 70. You're now down to a D. Whoa, that works wonders. And you really have a lot of participation in the small groups and a lot of just a good classroom management skill happening there. So a lot more oral reading happens because more people can read in that short time. I do individual reading as well. And I have them whisper read sometimes, what I call whisper reading. And they simply take, I'll give you just a moment to write down the other there. Okay, whisper read or blab read. I don't like the blab reading because it's just too noisy, but I'm going to give you just a sense of that. But on occasion, I will do that. And everybody reads maybe a page aloud at the same time. So I want you to read the very first paragraph. We'll start here with, he looked up. And so let's read three sentences. Some of you read slowly, some of you read fast, okay? Let's kind of do that. Don't try to stay together. So on the count, when I say go, or when I say start, you go ahead and start. And let's read down through that. Let's go ahead and read the full paragraph. Okay, start. Do you know why you don't want to do the whole story that way? It really does get noisy. But it's a good way, and they enjoy that. That's blab reading. Whisper reading is doing this. But you see their mouths going? If you have them read silently, you're going to have a wide variation of when people will be done with the story. So if you choose that avenue, you're going to have to think what you're going to have them do when they're done with the story. Sometimes I'll say, okay, if you read silently, and if they're done, then they go back and they whisper read, and then they go back and maybe they have to read in a very soft voice. Or sometimes I'll say, you may work on your seat work once you're done reading silently. Most often, I give them a list of questions. And again, a good way to do that is say you can't use your book then to answer the questions. That will cause them to slow down and think about what the story is about. We are running out of time. Let's keep on going here. Sometimes I have them read until the timer beeps when they read silently like that. Lots of ways to do it. Those are just a few ways. One more thing that you might want to consider, and I won't have time to talk about this, so I'm going to skip this part, but if you have questions, you have a handout. You have what I call a rubric for oral reading grades. It's the one that's stapled. And there you can have various ways on how to grade orally. And I would suggest at this age level yet, I would suggest that you give them a grade for oral reading. And I would say maybe 2 or 3 grades per quarter. And it might take you 2 or 3 days to get the whole class in. When we do oral reading grades, I have them read more. And I'll say, we're starting with oral reading. I want you to stay with me, but I'm going to have you maybe you read a whole page. And then I mark while they read. You can also do that when you have small groups. You can choose to do that if you want to do it that way. So we're just going to fly through this one. You have the list in your booklet, and we'll go on over to finishing up the practice part, the post-reading. So we had the pre-reading, the vocabulary, preparing for the story, the reading experience, a number of ways to read orally. I didn't even bring in how you should maybe at times pause and ask questions throughout the story. That's also a very, very good way to build comprehension. I'm thinking more about post-reading now. and just some things you can do with the activity. One of the things you can do is summarize the story, have them summarize the story, and by getting a short oral response, thinking about the main ideas, like what happened at the beginning, what happened in the middle, what happened at the end. So today we read about Caddy Woodlawn. I might give them a sentence starter. Now, how would you summarize what this story was about? Today we read about Caddy Woodlawn. And in one of your pairs, one of you turn and tell, just one of you. And then I'll have something else for the other person. So go ahead, turn and tell. How would you summarize the story? Just a sentence or two.
She was proud about her dress.
Okay, thank you. That's about as short as it should be, okay? Not very long, you're just summarizing. And that is very much a skill that students need to learn. How can you summarize? Well, the story we read today was about Caddy Woodlawn and her brothers who were very unkind to Cousin Annabelle. Students retelling the story, this is an important one. And they, again, you can, I'm sorry, you can have them retell the story to each other. And this goes, what I'm saying now will also go with my next point as well. So sometimes when I have them narrate, I'll have a list of things on the board like they did over here. And then they know how it'll trigger ideas in their mind, and they'll be able to go from the beginning of the story through the middle of the story and the end of the story by looking at that. They shouldn't just talk about that. Those are triggers for them. But that's also a good way to help them write. Whenever you have them do a writing experience, put a couple words on the board, the words you want to have included in that writing experience, and then they'll be able to produce that. So the next one is listing main events. So you list the main ideas on the chalkboard, and you write a paragraph or draw the ideas. So coming back now, let's narrate. The other person who didn't talk, just narrate down to here. Start telling the story about Annabelle coming down and how she explained to the Woodlawns why she had all those buttons. So whatever you remember about Annabelle's buttons explanation, Hetty's concern about her writing feet, and then Annabelle writing. Turn and tap. Good. I'm hearing the kind of buzz I would want. So that's how you would narrate the story. Or list it with or if you have them write and by listing the events or the ideas. Questions, certainly. One of the things, if you want this classroom discussion, it is going to take a lot of work to get everybody involved. So it's much better to have them turn and tell than to just have one person, a ping pong discussion, student and teacher, student and teacher, student and teacher. So here are the five questions I want you to think about. Think about W questions. Who? Say it after me. Who?
Who?
What?
What?
When?
When?
Where?
Where?
Why?
Why?
And then you have the word how with the W at the end. So add that on. You can. Let's do that quickly with the story. Who was the story about today that I read to you?
Annabelle.
Very good. Let me back up. What was she there for? Mm-hmm. Very good. Where did she ride Pete? In the barnyard. Very good. And why did we laugh? You got it. Okay, get the idea? And how you can make up any questions very quickly. Now, ideally, you would write them down. You won't have time every day to write them down. But if you use the W questions with your reading lesson, you're doing well. And then stretch it. So now I would go, when they say, why did you laugh? And I say,
So why did that make you laugh? And then they might say, what was funny? So what was funny about it? Well, like seeing Annabelle sitting on the desk. But how would that be what we should do as followers of Jesus? And then we get into some really good discussions. And so keep stretching those questions as much as you have time for.
I do this all the time. I run out of time.
Okay, what were the three primary sections in our reading class today? Can you call them out? Pre-reading, reading experience, and what else? Post-reading. Say them again.
Pre-reading, reading experience, post-reading.
Very good. And I'd like you to think about, you won't have time to do this, but what is one thing you want to try in each of the three sections above? Something that you haven't heard about before, maybe? Or something that you just like to try because you heard about it today. And in closing, I'd like to quote Gladys Hunt. Reading aloud and sharing a book demonstrates that stories are fun and books are friends. I hope that you will make readers out of your classroom. I tell my students, when you come in the year and you don't like reading, my goal is to make you walk out of the room loving reading, and I hope you do the same. Have a great year. God bless you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.